Okay, hi, I am Brian Cardell. I am a developer advocate at Agalia.
And I'm Eric Meyer, also a developer advocate at Agalia.
And we just got back from the W3C's big annual TPAC event that brings together, I don't know, I would say like maybe 500 people were there.
Yeah, it feels about right. I heard it was at least a few hundred.
I heard an estimate that was close to 500.
Okay.
Yeah, so lots of working group meetings and things. And we thought we would do a show to discuss what that was like and what happened and what we've been doing the past week.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective anyway, one of the important things about TPAC is it brings all of the working groups together, right? So, like, each working group of the W3C, such as the CSS working group or the web accessibility working group or, you know, whatever working groups, they meet on their own schedule remotely, you know, virtually most of the year. And then some working groups will have a few in-person meetings, but every working group effectively has an in-person meeting at TPAC. And it's a time where those working groups can actually have joint meetings. So I'll talk about CSS because that's the working group I spend the most time in. But the first couple of days were almost back-to-back joint meetings between CSS and working group and whatever other working group. So there was a joint meeting between the CSS and accessibility working groups, actually a couple of different accessibility-related working groups, where things were discussed like, okay, we're talking about doing this in CSS. What are the accessibility problems? Or the accessibility folks saying, hey, this is an accessibility problem. This presentation is an accessibility problem. How can that be addressed? But those, you know, it could be the accessibility working group probably cross-met with the spatial computing working group, right? And CSS and spatial computing could get together or, you know, the whoever. And those, I think, are really valuable because, yes, you can do that sort of thing online. And that does happen, in fact. But being in having everyone in the same place, like literally in the same room, and being able to sort of interact in that way, I think is really valuable.
Then there is on Wednesday every year, there is Breakouts Day, which is like a little bit more freeform. People suggest topics, and it's what's the name of this that you know? I the word I know is Barcamp style, but there's another one. Maybe people don't know that one.
You know? I think it's just unconference.
Yeah, it's an unconference. So, yeah. You know, people suggest different topics and then, you know, they align, they find out which ones have support, which ones have interest, and then they kind of try to arrange them on a schedule where people can attend different ones. And so those actually, everybody loves those. I mean, that's, I think, everybody's favorite day of TPAC. There's so much valuable stuff that happens there. And I kind of wonder if like 2 days of breakouts would be even better, because what happened this year is there's like 13 separate tracks and there's too many things that are.
Yeah, actually, I just counted. It was 14. There was 14 parallel tracks and almost every track had something in it. And that, when we say tracks, there were 13 or 14 concurrent breakout sessions happening. And so, yeah, I mean, that's not unreasonable to say, maybe if we only had 7 tracks per day and we did those across 2 days, but even that would be crazy. And, you know, we should say these are breakout sessions that were proposed by people coming to TPAC. Mm-hmm. And they could be, there are things like web documentation, discussing how to handle web feature deprecation. You know, I'm looking at the schedule right now and there are things like mitigate threats for the digital credentials API. That was a 1-hour breakout session. Cookie layering, the digital wallet project in Taiwan, right? Mm-hmm. So sort of a case study of here's how we did this. Harmonizing identity-related web platform APIs. Next, actions for digital manga and comics.
Yeah, that was a interesting one I didn't get to do. That was a big thing in 2018 or 19. It was one of those. W3C did a whole thing with the manga, like digital. It's very cool, actually. So I wanted to follow up and see, but I didn't get to go to that one because, you know, there are 14 competing tracks.
Right.
And exactly. There were at least three that I wanted to be in at any given point in time.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. There were ones like there was one called Let's Actually Fix Web Notifications was competing mm-hmm. with Web on the Moon.
Yeah. That also seemed really interesting. I mean, it's kind of like out there, but like.
I wanted to go to that one, but it was, like you said, it was up against something else. And I'm trying to scan. There was a 1 year update on partitioning the visited links history was mm-hmm. one that I went to. And that was actually very interesting and got pretty deep into the technical weeds of like what Chrome does and what they would like to do and how that might impact, you know, future technologies. I couldn't even follow some of it because it was deep enough in the weeds. It was like, here are the various modules and how they relate. And here's a great big flowchart of what happens inside the engine. And I was lost at that point, but it was still interesting. There are just so many more.
Yeah. An interesting thing that I bet a lot of people don't know is, you know, we think about like W3C and WCAG or WCAG, however you prefer to say it. I think a lot of people think about them as like completely disjoint, but, you know, like the people who are work in WCAG also are involved in W3C, and they came from like originally it came out of W3C, and they always have used like W3C stuff, like, you know, like meetings and connections and things like that. So,
yeah.
So all, you know, they all attend TPAC, and there is come meet with WCAG, internationalization people, accessibility people, security people, privacy people, people who have things about web components, people who have things about CSS, OpenUI, right? Like, so there's a lot of interesting things happening there because, you know, a lot of the things that I'm interested in that I talk about ultimately touch HTML or the DOM somehow. And yeah. And so I thought those were pretty interesting meetings. Mm-hmm. And as far as the breakouts go, there were some that I went to that were web components themed. There's a lot of open web components issues. One that I was really excited to see make good progress is the Crossroot ARIA stuff. I think we're going to work on that this year. Excited to solve that because it's really difficult that you know, we have this boundary where IDs from the outside don't make sense on the inside. This is a recurring theme that you'll see. And there's a bunch of issues in CSS that are like this too. Like, so you create a name in CSS for an animation. Where's that name relevant?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually just found the list of the different quote unquote tracks. There was feature lifecycle, permissions, identity. Those were separate. UX, real-time web, AI, web components, wallets, standards, and web apps were sort of the quote-unquote tracks, but a whole bunch of the breakout sessions were not classified in specific tracks. So, you know, they were just, this is interesting. It doesn't fit into one of these categories, but we're going to put it on the schedule anyway. And we've marked certain ones like all the AI related things were marked with little robot symbols. So, you know, web and generative AI risks was followed by web API for hybrid AI. And then there was a demonstration of AI powered accessibility auditing, you know, things like that. But then like there was literally just a web components category, like, as I say, track, quote unquote. So, you know, style sharing styles with declarative shadow DOM, scoped custom element registry, web components and ARIA. Those were some of the sessions from that particular track. So yeah, I mean, it was really cool. And really overwhelming and really exhausting, I have to say.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you just, there are breaks between, but you just boom, boom, boom. And then there was always that, you know, well, basically what I told people when people said, "Hey, what are you going to do on Wednesday?" I said, "Well, I'm not sure right now because
right.
I went through and subscribed to all of the sessions that sounded like really interesting, not just vaguely interesting, but really interesting. And my Wednesday calendar looks like a game of Tetris that I am about to lose."
Yeah, exactly.
Because there were just so many things next to each other. And, you know, eventually you have to pick. But yeah, it would be nice to have a little bit less of a tyranny of choice there.
Yeah.
In some way. Yeah. But it's, yeah, but that, then it's difficult because you have 5 days and like the CSS working group did a full 2 days of just the CSS working group face to face.
Yeah.
And almost two full days before Wednesday of the joint meetings. And, you know, is maybe the answer if we did two breakout days is only do joint meetings and don't really do a meeting of your own, but that then cuts down on the number of face-to-face meetings that some working groups can do. Yeah. It's always a real, it's a real challenge because.
Yeah. So there is actually one that I missed that I really, really wanted to attend, which is, so 7 years ago, I just looked this up. 7 years ago, I did this whole series on web speech. And I was like fascinated by web speech because it is one of the sort of lost things. It's like because of when it was created and how it came about there. It's like it's not actually a W3C rec track thing, but it has wide implementation. But the wide implementations are like kind of in the state of the DOM when jQuery was around, where it's like you definitely need something to paper over the inconsistencies. And also the API is not good. Like it lacks a lot of features. And so I wrote these articles and then I opened a thing for tag review, hoping to get it started. And then it went into some W3C process thing. And there was like, for years, there would be like, "Hey, let's talk about it briefly." And then just like kind of nothing. And there was one about like improvements to web speech and it was like driven by Google. And I was like, "Oh, I definitely have to go to that." And then I couldn't. And the reason I couldn't is because Rob Flack from Google was giving his breakout on the carousels patterns. And people probably don't, you might remember the spicy sections experiments that we did. We kind of backed off on that because of some feedback that we got because we're looking for patterns to resolve the feedback that we got. And it looked like this might be the way. And so we've kind of given Rob some feedback along the way. And, you know, in his presentation, there was a lot of discussion about using this for tabs and got some interesting and mostly positive feedback. So I'm really hoping that develops.
Was that the one about doing carousels via CSS or was it a different one? Because there were a couple of carousels. Exactly that. Okay. Let's get into like what we saw and what was interesting. So this was a breakout, which I guess is sort of like a talk depending on how it's structured. But this was Rob from Google saying, "Here's a proposal for ways to use," basically, "Here's a proposal for things to add to CSS to make carousels possible." Is that sort of what it was or?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And you feel like it's going in a good direction or at least it's in vaguely the right direction or?
Well, yes, is the short answer to that.
Okay.
I think that it's difficult because when we begin talking about this, everybody, including myself, wants to say like carousels are not good. Like they're not good. And yet they exist. And it's foolish of us to just say, don't do that. You know, I have this reaction a lot. Like I had this reaction when CSS working group introduced the ability to reorder content without like saying how that should work for accessibility. And then they were just like, here's the best feature ever, but don't use it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I think we've learned over the years is that if you decide that a thing people are doing shouldn't be done, and so you don't like create a standard way to do it because it shouldn't be done, then everyone goes off and comes up with their own way to do it. And many of them are much worse. Like this yeah. actual solutions are much worse than if you had just like put it in JavaScript or put it in CSS or whatever, right? Or HTML for that matter. Like you end up with really terrible, incredibly heavy, you know, only works on the latest browser kind of solutions instead of, well, if we had done this at the time, then, you know, 5 years ago, then it would be very widely supported and it could be performant and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, with carousels, I think there's likely to be that discussion if, you know, if these proposals move forward to add carousel capabilities to CSS, there's going to be probably a discussion with some pushback, like don't add this crap to CSS. Nobody should ever do carousels. And I think the counter sort of the response to that is, yeah, but if we don't do this, people will just keep doing carousels even worse. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so we should make this, we should standardize this, because if it's in CSS, then it's much more easily exposable to accessibility features, the accessibility tree, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And also there's an aspect of this that is like, what is it, you know, like what is it and how does it work? So like most of this is built on scrolling and scroll snap and new kind of sort of like primitives for like almost like paging through content, you know? Right. And then like, how does that work? Like making it easy to make that accessible. So I think a lot of it has to do with thinking about how you break it down. Like, should this be a new element or what is it? And
right.
the things that I wrote about when we started the spicy sections is that for a lot of content, like, should it be a carousel? Okay, no is the answer probably. But like design wise, if you're just like a designer and you like a carousel, like, should it be a carousel? My answer is probably like, maybe. It depends. Like, what does my screen size look like? You know, how much available space do I have? Maybe sometimes I want to squeeze it into a carousel because it's like, this is a lot of information. And if you're on a mobile device, maybe it's like super easy to thumb through it.
Yeah.
And it like, you can just scroll past it really easily. Whereas like on a desktop, maybe I want to put it in a grid or something like that, you know?
Right.
So thinking about it like that allows you to say like, well, it's like a primitive like scroll, and like we don't have a scroll element in the web. You know, that's a thing that's about design. There's a design affordance that we allow you to apply. And so, you know, that's where the analogy comes in here that I think is pretty useful.
Yeah. And I will say, like, mobile is where I don't hate carousels. We don't think of them as carousels probably, but like you said, yeah, on mobile, if I'm thumbing through a page and I come to a section that it somehow tells me, hey, you can swipe sideways here to see different things, like, I'm okay with that. That works. Sure. But then on desktop, generally, no thank you. I would much rather have them as a grid. And so, yeah, so having all of this in, let's CSS is what this was about, you know, is probably on balance a win, because like I say, then things are more addressable from the accessibility side if they're formally represented, like the CSS object model can communicate back and forth with the accessibility model and all that sort of thing. I thought one of the interesting sessions that I saw, the visited links one, the 1 year report like a, that I mentioned before. That was interesting. I hope that I can track down like a copy of a, like a recording of it or some, you know, slides or whatever. But another one that I really was interested in was a discussion about the HTML model element. So this is a proposed element for HTML that would be used to refer to a 3D model or a 3D scene, depending on what kind of terminology you want. But just, you know, sort of the way that we have video and audio elements that can refer to video or audio, this would refer to a 3D model. And it could be a simple 3D model, or it could be a much more complicated 3D model. One of the things that got discussed as part of this breakout was whether or not this was the appropriate structure if you have a 3D model that involves like animations and loops. Mm-hmm. Is it sufficient to just have a model element, or would you need more elements? Do you want to represent that sort of thing as elements? And also, for that matter, how do you manage partial content? Because 3D scenes can become very, very large in terms of the number of bytes that have to be transferred, because the geometry is fairly simple, but most 3D scenes have a whole lot of texturing, and the texturing is usually raster images. And even if it's not raster images, it's probably very complicated SVG images, or it could be videos, right? Like there could be videos embedded in the scene or projected on walls or whatever. And you could easily, I think the number they were saying was that these 3D models can easily be 100 megabytes, which is enormous. You know, nobody would ever.
It's like, almost the size of a web page.
Yeah, really. I wouldn't even put 100 megabyte video onto a web page. And the way YouTube gets away with it is that they send little chunks, right? Each video is effectively chopped up into a bunch of, like, you know, these little chunks, and those are sent to you sort of one at a time. Or maybe in parallel, if you have a sufficiently capable browser that supports that sort of thing in HTTP. But the point being, they're not just sending you 100 megabyte movie file. And so there were questions about how do we manage that in 3D scenes? Like, and then it got into discussions like level of detail, which is a rendering technique that 3D modelers already use, right? And so there were questions like, okay, if a model has levels of detail, do we specify such that the lowest level of detail models are sent first and the scene starts to render and it might be like all chunky. And then as the higher level of detail models come in, they get dynamically replaced. Like, is that acceptable?
Yeah, I think that's a thing on video as well, right? Like the adaptive bitrate thing you see in even television, if you are watching mm-hmm. television, it's all digital these days. And sometimes yep. you can see it get a little bit blocky, but it tries to keep up so that you can get everything. So you might have like a super HD and, you know, you're getting regular HD or even like the lowest kind of,
or even, SD. Because they're trying to have it be a continuous experience rather than showing you 4K and then stopping for 30 seconds while the little spinner goes, right? Which if you hit that in streaming, you're like, okay, I don't have any bitrate. And I see it on YouTube too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're watching a video and it starts out in, you know, 1080p or whatever. And then, you know, for whatever reason, suddenly it's in 144 and everything's super blocky. And, you know, if it's just something you're playing in the background or it's your second screen or sort of background noise, maybe you don't care. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to watch something technical that has lots of details, you might be like, oh God, now I have to figure out what to do. Cause if I just pause it, it's like the chunk that it sent me and possibly the next several chunks are all in 144.
Yeah.
Right. And I already have those locally. It's not going to send those to me again. So like, do I reload the whole thing? Anyway. Yeah. So these are the kinds of things that get discussed. And again, one of the advantages of having everyone in one place and having these, either these joint sessions or these breakout sessions, is someone can say, okay, I'm going to talk for 45 minutes about the model element, or more precisely, we're going to talk for 45 minutes about the model element, right? Like whoever suggested it might have a quick presentation of here's where we stand right now with this proposal. Right. Comments, right? And you could have, there's somebody from privacy and there's somebody from like the performance community and a web component expert and, people are able to say, okay, have you considered that 3D models could be used for fingerprinting in the following ways? Right. Or, you know, I'm really concerned about 100 megabyte models and their impact on web performance, both for the user and just in general. Like, you know, we're already in some ways struggling to keep up with video streaming. What are we going to do about model streaming? And then someone like me could say, you know, is there a way that I could use CSS to change the color of anything in the model? Like, I didn't say that because they're not at that point, but you know, maybe somebody's really interested in being able to say that the background color of a 3D model should be in their corporate primary color instead of whatever the normal skybox is. And you're like, well, CSS has backgrounds. That's a background.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you have meetings like this, you have all this like cross, you know, that's the whole idea of it. You have like all this like cross idea things like that start to come together. Like, I think I also wanted to go to that, but I didn't because there was something else that I went to instead. I don't know which one it was, but I saw in the minutes that one of the questions there was like, well, those things that you were talking about, they sound in some ways like really similar to audio and video, and those are media elements. And that means like in the spec and from a IDL standpoint, like the parts you can touch with JavaScript, they have certain similarities. And like, should it be a media element?
Right. Should it be a new kind of media?
Yeah. And then, so you get people in there from, you know, Wattwig who are thinking about that. And then maybe you get somebody in there from like CSS, like you, who makes that comment. And maybe you get somebody from Web Components who says like, oh, well, yeah, I can appreciate how this is complicated, but you know, in Web Components, you can expose parts, and then those parts, like you can have limited styling on. And maybe that's a way that you could say in this 3D model, the background is exposed like this with this pseudo class, like it exports these parts. And then, you know, you cannot have full control over the styling, but whoever makes the model can like allow, can like expose parts. So maybe they expose a part that's like hair and a part that's like, you know, skin and eyes and whatever. And you, you know, you can set their backgrounds and their foregrounds, and it could be interesting, you know, but those kind of ideas smash together in person much more rapidly. And also I would say, get short-circuited much more rapidly if they're a non-starter, rather than somebody thinking about that a whole lot and then going off and like writing a blog and, you know, doing a whole bunch of work, and then somebody to point out like the obvious rub that you're not thinking of, you know.
Right.
It's helpful sometimes, you know.
Yeah. And speaking of parts, wasn't one of the things you went to about DOM parts?
I did not actually attend that. I was very interested in it.
Okay.
I have been interested in it for a long time. If you don't know, this is the, you know, a lot of people say like, well, why doesn't the DOM have like a templating kind of thing to begin with? Right. I mean, like you can't, the fact that you can't is why we have so many other solutions, right? Like we have to, you have to have handlebars, you have to have, they used to be mustache. Like I'm dating myself with the ones I'm using here, but you know, Angular, React, JSX, you know,
right.
all of these, lit, you know, all of these have some kind of templating in them. A lot of people then try to make slots be that, but slots aren't really that. So this is aiming to be an answer, but it's more aiming to be like a primitive that could be used by all those other ones. Probably not one that you'll just use exactly directly. I don't know. It's very complicated, and both Apple and Google are interested in it, and it makes slow progress, but it's probably 10 or 12 years into it and we're not there. And there was something else that was going on at the same time, or maybe I was just in a really interesting conversation and couldn't go. I did want to mention, like, one of the most important things I think about TPAC is that you meet real human beings who are really interested and concerned about the web, and probably in capacities that you're like, that are totally new to you. And you like, you find out that, oh, there's these people and these people really could use your help, actually, you know. Here's this really important thing that you like just totally never considered. And a lot of times I think it's also us bringing it in the other direction, where it's like us explaining to a lot of people why, like, it's really important to increase the sponsorship outside of Apple and Google. I also give you a little bit of like inside baseball about like the breakdown of this. So we said that there was like 500 and whatever, right? Like 120 of those, I think, were from Google.
Yikes.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
I did not realize there were that many.
There were over 100 from Google. Wow. And I don't know, from Apple, I would guess more like 20, something like that. I don't know how many from Mozilla. I would have to guess it's probably also in the same kind of ballpark.
As Apple, you mean?
Yeah. And we sent 7, I think.
Yeah, 6 or 7.
And many organizations send 1 person, you know.
I mean, yeah.
Many organizations send 1 or 2 people, and they are there for a very specific reason.
Right.
But yeah, you meet a lot of people and help make connections. Sometimes you can say, oh, you should talk to XYZ, and you can help connect people on things. It's really, I think that is actually very, very important. Egalia sponsors TPAC every year since, I don't know,
a long time ago.
17, I think, something like that.
Yeah. Which is now a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're, I think, the only ones that have done that consistently for a really long time. And so W3C has a new CEO, Seth Dobbs.
Yep.
And also a new CDO, Chief Development Officer, Sylvia Cadena. I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong, unfortunately.
Thanks. No, Sylvia Cadena sounds about right.
And because of our sponsorship, they asked to meet with me, and we had a nice like hour long meeting about like the future of W3C and what we think W3C should do and like what Egalia does. And that was really nice.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So we also got to help hook up Open Web Docs with Sylvia, because she was talking about like she has a long history of like fundraising and things like that. And we were saying like, look, the way that all this stuff is funded is like, you know, look around at what's going on here. I mean, like, overwhelmingly Google, you know. And I mean, I don't want to talk Google out of sending 100 people. I think it's great that they send 100 people, you know what I mean. Somebody has to fund this stuff, and they're funding it, and whatever the flaws in that, I'm glad that they're funding it, you know. But we need a strategy for when things don't go right. And here's what happened with MDN, and here's how we got Open Web Docs. And I really like to introduce you if it's okay, you know. And so hopefully that pans out. And
yeah,
that can be a good introduction.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you. I mean, as somebody who's involved in Open Web Docs, I'm a steering committee and governing committee member, thanks to Egalia's support of Open Web Docs. Funding has been a concern, like it is for everybody, because turns out you need money to operate in our current economic setup. So it's a thing. It's Strange, shocking, but true. I know. Yeah. And that, I mean, that is like one of the things that I really got out of TPAC. And this was my first, by the way. This was my first TPAC. A lot of people didn't believe that.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that myself. Like a number of people were like, how can that be possible?
Right. Yeah. And I actually got into a couple conversations where people said, yeah, I think I met you a couple years ago when you did that talk at TPAC. I was like, I'm glad that it had made an impression on you because I wasn't here.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. You did a keynote thing, right? Like you did a thing about funding, actually.
Yes, I did do a talk.
We're going to like that, and people should watch it because this is a really good talk, actually.
I like it, but yeah, I did a talk that it was a couple years ago now. I don't know, whatever. That I recorded, and it was played at TPAC, but I was not physically there because for various reasons, you can't always go. So yeah, people were just, they were like, yeah, you were standing in a train station. And I was like, okay, yeah, clearly you saw the talk and you have now remembered that I was there, but I in fact was not. But anyway, the point being that was kind of a rabbit hole sidebar to the idea that what I really got out of it being my first TPAC was in a lot of cases, I met people in meet space for the first time, right? I started calling it, this is our first meet, right? Like people that I have been working with online for years, or in some cases, probably measurable in decades, more than half of Open Web Docs, I was meeting in person for the first time. Like of the four who were there, Estelle is the only one that I had ever met in person before. Estelle Whale, who was a co-author on my book. But you know, we had only met a couple times before in person. So we got to hang out, and I got to meet Florian Schultz and Will Bamberg and Vinyl in person and like hang out with them for a little bit. And then Kadir Topal, who's one of the Web DX community group, not chairs exactly, but he's kind of an organizer, met him in person for the first time. And you and I had a really good conversation with him and Pete LePage, who I hadn't seen in years, about Baseline and about Web DX and about BCD Watch. And related stuff that was... I thought it was really interesting, and it was nice to be able to just have that conversation. Like we were sitting on one of the tables on the terrace where the breaks and the lunches were, just like talking about this stuff that interested us all and that we all want to see pushed forward. It's sort of the hallway track is what people who go to sort of more traditional conferences call it. Yeah. And this is, it's the same kind of thing here. I mean, maybe a terrace track, but
yeah, the most valuable thing, actually is that, I think it's the, you know, you can call it the hallway track, or also there's the like dinner and drinks track, right? Where,
right.
Things that are just even like, whatever, they just come up and you have an opportunity to talk to people. Sometimes it's even, you know, people that you weren't even expecting to be in the conversation, and really good stuff happens.
Yeah. It's, you know, you might spot someone who you've been meaning to talk to and go over, and they're talking with a few other people and you're like, hey, it's good to see you. And you're like, hey, have you met so-and-so and this person, and that person? Maybe some of them you have and some of them you haven't. And you know, what are you all talking about? And it turns out to be something that you hadn't even been thinking about, but suddenly it's super interesting because you're talking with people who are super passionate about 3D modeling or digital identity or micropayments on the web, and you just start absorbing. And maybe if you're lucky, it's something that you know a little bit about, and you can give something back to. And yeah, I mean, I think that's always any conference, any gathering, the hallway track is really almost always the most valuable. What else did we see? We're coming to the end, but anything else?
We had the hackathon.
Oh yeah,
there was a hackathon. Usually happens at these. is that there is a developer meetup. Mm-hmm. But these are things that are organized independently, usually. So this year there was no developer meetup. And part of the reason I think there was no developer meetup is this one was really packed because this was, I can't believe we're only bringing this up now, but this is the 30th anniversary of W3C.
Yeah.
And so there was like a lot around that on Wednesday, I think, in
yep.
the evening.
It was on Wednesday. Yep. There was a gala or gala, yeah. whatever, which sounds way swankier than it actually was. Although some people did dress up very, very spiffily.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
not everyone.
Not everyone.
But it was nice.
So I think it was really packed, and that's why we didn't have like a developer meetup this time.
Okay.
And Alina Lape, who is from Holopin, it's kind of an interesting mm-hmm. company that does like digital badging, not like to swipe you in and out, but like kind of like the old Mozilla badging thing, you know, like that, where you can like, you know, you can create these like certifications, I guess, is a use case where you can say like, hey, this person completed this, and you have like this collection of digital verifiable things. It's an interesting idea. I remember tracking it when Mozilla was doing it years and years ago, like 2012. And so somebody built a company on that idea, and it's kind of interesting. But she put together this hackathon, and it was just people from TPAC, and she organized some money for some prizes and pizza and soda. Yeah. It was nice. I wasn't going to go to it. I didn't register for it or anything, but then I showed up late and decided to do it. Actually, I showed up late and I handed in a kind of a joke. I wrote a thing with Charles McCathy Neville on, we wrote it on paper and it was just a joke and we handed it in. But then she like took it seriously and was like trying to upload it to the GitHub. So I thought, well, I better do a real thing. So yeah, it was short, but I used the time. The assignment for the thing was to create like a tutorial, right? Like something to educate.
Right.
And given that I was like short on time, I thought like, well, I wonder if there's like something that I know that like a lot of people in this room probably don't know. Maybe I can at least do something that's educational, so it's interesting to them, but also helps promote a thing that I'm interested in to get more eyeballs on it. And so I just pointed people to, I mean, it's very super brief. I pointed people to the GitHub for the heading offset that we talked about with Keith Circle on a couple shows ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's a polyfill for that. And I made people aware of, you know, the purpose, that it's like literally the oldest problem on the web and that it's kind of making progress. And here's how it works. It's like very, very simple.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect to win anything, but somehow I did. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I won because it was interesting. Like it wasn't fancy. It was not fancy. I mean, it looked like Tim Berners-Lee's original webpage. Like it was not, it was very, very basic, but I think it was interesting. So
yeah.
So I won some Legos that I gave away.
Wow. Which one did you win? I forget.
It's like third place. It was like a space Lego thing. I don't do Legos, and I don't have room to bring them back on my It's kind of a problem with that sort of thing. Like gift cards are very portable. Maybe next time gift cards would be a better.
There you go. Yeah, I know they were all space themed Lego, but I couldn't remember which set you had won. But
there were some good entries though. Yours and Estelle's was very clever. Very clever. I voted for yours and Estelle's. It was very clever.
Yeah, well, we voted for yours, or at least I did.
So what do you want to say what yours was, or do you want me to explain?
Estelle and I did a 5-star rating widget, which Estelle had actually created, to be honest. But it worked without JavaScript, and it was specifically set up so that you couldn't submit unless you gave a 5-star rating. Because that's what our project deserved. But it used like a JSON sibling and the control state pseudo classes like invalid and valid and checked In combination, there was also Haz, which we didn't even try to tutorialize, but it was in there. And yeah, it just, because the idea was write a tutorial, right? And so Estelle and I, having written a book that's meant to be a tutorial, and also each having done quite a bit of work on MDN, she's done quite a bit more than I have, but we've both done a lot of work on MDN, writing pages that have to have at least some tutorial element to them in like examples. And she's actually written full tutorials on MDN. So we like wrote a tutorial, kind of.
Yeah, it was like super interesting to see the different takes on this. And like when I walked in late, I asked a question because we were going to make like, you know, our kind of joking one. Well, it wasn't actually joking. It was based on an idea that I had, but it was completely fictional. And I was like, does it have to be a real thing? Or can it be like a thing that you want to exist? Hmm. And like lots of people were like kind of groaned, but I was like, but it seems like a legit question. And I think I wasn't the only one that did something that wasn't yet, you know, implemented in all the browsers. So you don't know. It's to some degree, it's like in process. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's interesting. Like Tontek did one on the A element.
Yep.
And I can't, Emilio and I'm sorry, I don't remember who was with Emilio, but they did it like a fantastic one. That was really cool. I think it won second place.
Was that the dark light one?
Yeah, it was like the light dark dark light one, and it was amazing because like in their demo, they didn't realize until they were done with their demo, they found 3 bugs.
Yeah.
That they were able to report to other browsers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, just in making that demo.
Really cool.
Yeah.
And then the winner,
But it's not cool because we should have like there should already be tests and bugs for those, you know. But yeah, it is very cool.
And then the winner, what were they demonstrating?
I don't honestly remember what they were demonstrating, but it was like fantastically cool. Like it was like this whole like parallax thing with like, you know, look like Super Mario Brothers kind of art, like as you scrolled, like the stuff changed and it was very involved. Yeah. Like I feel like maybe they must have had done that somewhere else or something, you know, like, and just had a bunch of notes and snippets and things. Like Tontek said, like
maybe
all of his styling and everything was stuff that he had already done. So he did, like, he just had to write the tutorial part and follow that guidebook that he had for himself, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it was, I mean, it was fun in the end. It was nice to do that. But I think also maybe it leads to the last thing that I want to say about events like this is that I don't know about you, but I am not super social in my regular day-to-day life. And like I have even social anxiety. And man, this is a lot. I mean, you're on from the time you wake up until the time you go to bed, you know, you're social, and in meetings, and it's for me, I don't know, it's draining. Like I'm tired. Like my brain is tired today. Like I almost, if we were not doing this, I might have just been like, I need a day. Like,
Yeah, it is for people who are not naturally extroverts. And you and I are not. Yeah, it can be very draining. Like the social batteries get real depleted. And it gets to the point where, okay, the meetings are actually kind of a recharge moment because you're not necessarily talking to anyone else. You're listening and maybe you're taking notes or whatever. But yeah. And at the same time, it is the kind of social interaction that even though it may be draining, you're not skipping any of it if you can possibly avoid it, right? Like, you know, you're sitting with people at lunch. You know, anyone could have taken and maybe some people did take a plate and then not sit with a table of other people, like sit off to the side or take it up to their room or whatever if they're staying at that hotel. And that's always an option. And yet it was never an option, I think, that either of us took. There was one night, was it Monday night? I think Monday night after dinner, some people were going to the bar and I was like, yeah, no, I'm going back to my room. Thanks. I appreciate it. But I need to go do some stuff. And the stuff that I needed to go do was just decompress. But for the most part, yeah.
That's like the kind of flip side of this is that while it's a weird contradiction because I come back and I'm so drained, but also I'm so energized about the web and the topics and the,
Right. Yeah.
The thing I'm energized about is maybe emotionally, it can feel really a lot of the things that we work on, they span years, it can feel oh my God, there's so much stuff and it doesn't feel like any of it is moving. And it's just really disheartening. And maybe these people are just blocking me. And then you get together and a bunch of stuff happens and you see momentum and you meet with the people who you feel might be blocking and they're clearly not. They're just also really busy. And yeah, I don't know. I find it a strange contradiction in a way that it's my social battery is so drained at the end of it, but I'm also somehow really energized.
So socially drained, but professionally revved up.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up.
Yeah. I don't know that there's anything else left to say. I think that's TPAC.
I mean, part of the thing about TPAC is that we could probably keep talking for hours about, there are things we could say for hours, but at the same time that gets into the weeds. And if anyone's really interested in what your favorite working group did during TPAC, go to see if they have any notes from meetings. Most of them, I think, were captured in one way or another, some of them into actual GitHub issues and others sort of to the working group pages. So yeah, look for those.
Yeah, we'll link to the TPAC site and you can kind of surf around and maybe find the minutes. Yeah.
Awesome. So, well, it was good to see you in TPAC, sir.
Yeah, definitely good to see you and to hang out and to eat some good food with you.
Indeed.
So, till the next time.
Till next time.